You're listening to the Righteous Babe Podcast, the show that gives you the inspiration and practical tools you need to create a life-changing journaling practice. You may have kept a diary as a kid, but this is the grown woman's guide to journaling. I'm your host, Javacia Harris Bowser, and each week I'll offer you uplifting conversation and thought-provoking prompts to help you write your way to the best version of yourself. Let's do this. What's up, Journal Babes? It's your girl, Javacia, aka The Righteous Babe. And of course, that's righteous spelled W-R-I-T-E-O-U-S, because when you're a writer, you get to make up words. Today, I have a very special guest. So if you are listening to this around the time when it comes out, it is the end of Breast Cancer Awareness Month or Breast Cancer Action Month, whatever you would like to call it. Most of y'all know that I'm a breast cancer survivor, so every month is Breast Cancer Awareness Month for me, but October is that time of year when other folks are thinking about it as well. And today I have a very special guest, and that guest is April Stearns, who is the founder of Wildfire Magazine, which is a magazine for women who were diagnosed with breast cancer under the age of 50. Hello, April.
Hey, Javacia. Hello.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm so excited.
So if you read my book, Find Your Way Back, April's name might be familiar to you because she wrote the foreword to my book, which I am still very honored that you did that. So thank you again. I know I've thanked you a million times, but I want to thank you again for that because it's such a beautiful foreword. And so if you've read the foreword, you know a little bit of her story. But for those of you who haven't, April, can you tell the folks a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, and a little bit of your cancer story?
Yeah, definitely. So where to begin, right? Like right. All the different aspects. So many different chapters. But in a nutshell, I'm talking to you from my home in Santa Cruz, California. I live here with my family, my teenage daughter, my very close by always Velcro dog, Sky. So he's right here while we're talking. But yeah, our paths crossed a few years ago because, like you said, we both had a breast cancer diagnosis and we both do, you know, somewhat similar work, which is that we believe in the power of storytelling to transform lives. And so that's kind of my latest chapter of my life, I would say, has been going on for the last 8 years where I work in storytelling, and I kind of can't believe I get to do this, but I publish a magazine called Wildfire. It is narratives. And so I discovered along the way that sometimes people need help to kind of write, you know, memoirs, and particularly illness related memoirs, because we get really used to telling illness stories from the perspective of mostly just the diagnosis, right? Or yeah, like difficult parts of that story. And I really want to tell stories and help people tell stories that are fuller than that, that are more about the living, not just the surviving, you know, of whatever stage of, in my case, cancer, but, you know, whatever that illness is, whatever that diagnosis is, we all live at least, you know, another hour, another day or another week or whatever past that diagnosis. So how did you do it? You know, how did you put the pieces back together to take those steps? So that's what I enjoy doing now. Prior to that, I've had other jobs in writing and editing, but this is definitely, I feel most fulfilled doing this work now.
So, and it's such important work. And as you know, and as I'm sure everyone listening knows, this is a podcast that's all about journaling. So, and because I know that you do believe in the power of storytelling, you are a writer, I'm wondering, did you journal during treatment? Or, because I know for some folks, even if journaling is something you do when you're going through something like that, sometimes you don't journal because you're so focused on just getting through the treatment. So did you journal when you were going through your treatment?
I did. The format that my journaling took during the treatment year and beyond was the form of a blog. Mm-hmm. I kind of like the idea of journaling out loud, basically. So I liked to, I'm not one of those people who was, constructing blog posts in some other document and finessing them and everything else. My blog during my cancer year of treatment was very much like real time, just thoughts on the page, hit publish. Mm-hmm. And I think that's because in addition to trying to make sense of what I was going through and trying to work out those big, scary thoughts, I also really needed someone, anyone to witness what I was going through. And so for me, I really needed that public facing part of journaling, but that's what my blog was. It was really just me trying to make sense of what in the world was going on.
I love that idea of journaling out loud, like calling blogging journaling out loud. I love that so much. I'm so going to use that. I will definitely give you credit. But I love that so much. So you talked about how blogging, which was your journaling out loud, how that helped you through treatment. Because like you said, you just needed someone to witness what was happening. And I totally relate to that. How has journaling helped you with survivorship? Because I feel like survivorship is not something that people talk about enough of. I mean, you obviously talk about that a lot in the work that you do. But so many people don't talk about or even think about survivorship and how hard it is even after you've finished active treatment. So how has journaling helped you with that?
Yeah, well, I can tell you a really specific example of that. I guess I should just ask if are we able to talk about all sorts of adult topics on your podcast? Okay. So if you know me, you know that one aspect of survivorship that's been a real big challenge is intimacy after medical menopause. And this is an area, I would say, of post-treatment life that didn't get a lot of discussion in the oncology office at all. So it kind of took me by surprise, particularly because I was diagnosed at 35. I think possibly they handed me a pamphlet when I was in chemo and said that my sex life would be affected, but there were, it was a picture of people with gray hair. I was like, right, that's not me. Okay. I don't have to worry about this. But yeah, I was flung straight into medical menopause and it stuck. You know, I know for some people it's more short term and eventually their cycle comes back. For me, it ended up being a permanent thing. And so intimacy was something that was really deeply affected. And I'm now 8 years out from my, or not 8 years, what am I saying? I'm 11 years out from my diagnosis and treatment year. And it's still an aspect that takes work. And one journaling practice that I used that really, really significantly helped was to actually write letters to body parts.
Oh, and I love that. Yeah, I talk about that a lot on here. So I love that. Keep going.
Okay, perfect. Yeah. Well, I had never really considered doing it. And with regard to breast cancer, I had never considered bringing like other parts of my anatomy into that conversation. If anything, I was kind of pissed that, you know, my vagina, et cetera, was even like trying to show up to the breast cancer party. It's like, this is not your deal here, you know?
Like, you stay over there. This isn't about you.
Exactly. Exactly. And so I just found myself getting really upset that all these other aspects of my life were being affected. And so I was trying to solve this intimacy issue, which was, you know, physical in the sense that, you know, there's moisture that's gone away and all of that. But it was also a libido issue as well. I just had no interest. And so I was talking to a friend and she helped me to realize that maybe the intimacy libido part was affected by the deep anger that I had toward these other body parts that were getting in on it. And so I ended up just sitting down one day and journaling out this letter to, I think it was like specifically to my vagina. I'm like trying to remember now, but it was kind of like the whole nether region. Just like, what's the deal, guys? Like, what's going on? And it was so helpful because, you know, what happened after I wrote that letter is I then sat there and ended up receiving a letter back from my body. And the essence of that was, we're on the same side. Like, we have always been rooting for you and we want to help you in this and we're here for you. And it was basically like a coming back together, and it really, really squelched that anger that I felt. And for the first time in years, I felt like, okay, maybe we can figure this out with compassion instead of just resentment. And it was a really, really helpful practice.
Oh, I love that. That is so powerful. And I've talked on this show before about the idea of writing letters to different body parts. A few shows ago, I shared even something from my journal. It was a letter that I wrote to my belly. And in fact, what's interesting is that I actually wrote that when I was in a workshop with you. Yeah, so y'all, April leads these different writing workshops throughout the year, and most of y'all know that I lead writing workshops too, but it's nice for me to actually get to be a student sometimes, so I like to participate in April's workshops, and one that she had at the beginning of the year was about the body, and yeah, in that workshop, I wrote a letter to my belly, and I read that to you guys in an episode, so if you haven't listen to the episode. I think it's called Body Talk or something like that. So go check that out. But I love that idea. And you know, I had been thinking actually about doing an episode about how journaling can help with physical intimacy. And I feel like this conversation is like confirmation that I need to do that episode. So thank you. Thank you for that.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, because I definitely relate to that. I too was put or am in medical menopause because of breast cancer. And so I've had to be very intentional about certain things to make sure that my libido did not go away. And so, and you don't really think about journaling being the thing to save your libido, but real talk, it did. And so I think I'm going to do a whole episode on that, y'all. Cause yeah, journaling can help that libido. So even if you aren't in medical menopause and you're just having libido issues, I think that journaling can help.
Definitely. I mean, it's a mind game. Yeah. A lot of it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So tell me, when did you first start journaling? Did you journal as a kid, or is it something that you just started in adulthood? When did you first start?
My first memory of doing it was as a teenager. It's possible I was doing it before. I had a pen pal early on, maybe I was 11 or 12, and I kind of treated her like my journal, I think, for a long time. It's funny, like, we're still Facebook friends, and years ago, she gave me, like, a huge box of all the letters I had sent her, and looking back over them, I was definitely not so much concerned about, you know, any response I got. It was just like, here's 10 pages on what's going on. So yeah, I think that was like early dabbling in journaling. And then my really, really like deepest memory of journaling as a kid started probably when I was like 15, 16. I was raised by a mother who had pretty significant mental illness. She had borderline personality disorder. And for her, that made her really violent and pretty scary to be her child at that time. And I also didn't have a voice in that relationship at all. And so I started turning to my journal. And I'll tell you, the funny thing about it is around the time or maybe a few years before that, I had figured out that I type way faster than I handwrite. And so my journals from my teenage years are all typed. Mm. And it's funny, my dad worked at IBM. And so our family always had personal computers, even though this was, you know, early 90s. And we had this one that we named Harvey. I have no idea why Harvey was Harvey. Yes. But at some point, my dad got a replacement for our family computer. So he lugged Harvey and all of Harvey's accoutrements, like, down to my bedroom. And I remember staying up late at night, just banging out all this angst and just needing to make sense of the relationship with my mother, needing to have a voice, you know, somewhere to pour out the stuff that I couldn't say out loud, just to urgently kind of say to the world, I'm here. And I think that it really saved my life, honestly. Mm. I was really feeling out of control in that relationship. But because it was all typed out and that didn't feel very concrete, I used to also print out every single journal entry. And I had a dot matrix printer at that time. And anyone listening who knows dot matrix knows how noisy it is. So it's like bang out the whole story on a clackety old keyboard, then print the whole thing with the screeching printing, then tear off the side edges. Mm-hmm, and then three hole punch the thing, stick it in a binder, clip it shut. And all the while, I promise you, my brothers are on the other side of the wall, just banging on the wall every night. Like, please stop with this journal practice. Like, it's too much. So, oh my goodness. Yeah.
That is so funny. If there are younger people listening to this, they don't know what you're talking about.
I know, right? From all angles of it, all angles of it. But yeah, it felt important to print it out, but it also was really satisfying how much I could type, you know, compared to just the writing of it. And then I will say for anyone listening, if you're in a similar situation, like, get a really good hiding place for that journal. Cause I think the only way I was able to do that was knowing that my mom wasn't going to read it. Right. That was absolutely paramount. So, right. Yeah.
So what does your journaling practice look like these days?
So these days it's really different. It's interesting being a person who, you know, teaches writing and does so much writing or filtering of writing for other people, that my own journaling kind of comes out in more like my newsletter, the weekly newsletter I send for Wildfire. I sometimes use as kind of a journaling practice to make sense of what I'm going through with my own survivorship. And mm-hmm. again, it's a little bit of a nod back to those just blogging days. But the real journaling that I do that's not out loud and not shared with anyone else is kind of what I think of as casting spells. And what I mean by that is earlier, I think it was actually last year. I was going to say earlier this year, but sometime in the last year, I got turned on to a way of writing goals that was to write them in the future.
Right. Yeah.
Future present tense, mm-hmm, future past tense. Yeah.
Scripting. That's one thing. One way it's called. And I talked about that on this show before, the power of scripting. So yeah. So keep going.
Yeah. Well, so that's kind of my daily practice. And it's pretty like business focused, I would say, for the mm-hmm. most part. But then I also have stuff in there about my child and, you know, little goals that she might have. Like, I'm casting intentions for her, for my husband, for other family members. And it's been really, really powerful for me because it's been hard in my life to make goals, I would say, possibly because of, you know, my upbringing and not having like a clear sense of how I was going to survive, you know, my childhood. I never was taught to dream big. Mm-hmm. And so I came to that, you know, later as an adult, but it felt scary. Like, you know, well, what if I make this big goal and it doesn't come true? Then I failed the goal. Like, I'll just not make goals. And so writing it in this way now where it's like, I'm so grateful for this goal that has happened, and, you know, imagining that goal coming to be has been really powerful for me in just seeing a path forward.
Yeah, absolutely. I love, some people call it manifesting. I call it scripting. A lot of people call it scripting. I didn't come up with the scripting term, but it's such a powerful way of journaling. And I, as I've shared on the show before, I did a lot of scripting when I was going through cancer treatment. I would script about December 31st of 2020. So I went through cancer treatment in 2020. And, I knew that by the end of the year, I would be done with active treatment. My oncologist said I would have an inch of hair by then. My taste buds in my stomach would be well enough that I would be able to eat some of my favorite foods. And so I would just write about being able to do those things on New Year's Eve, right? And so scripting, yes, I use it for those big goals like you were talking about, but I also will use it just for, you know, like getting through a tough time, because I'll imagine myself on the other side of it and write about that. So yeah, it's definitely a powerful, powerful practice. So April and I are both all about community, and we're all about helping women share their story. So we're going to hear more about how she does that. But first, let me tell you a little bit more about my writing community. The Righteous Bay Podcast is a production of C. Jane Wright, a website and community for women who write and create, founded by me, Javacia Harris-Bowser. Through courses, coaching, community, and virtual events, C. Jane Wright empowers and equips women to use their writing skills and their stories to make money and make a difference. We'd love for you to check out our free Facebook group so you can see what we're all about. Just head over to Facebook, search for C. Jane Wright Network, and come join us. I look forward to chatting with you in the group. So as I mentioned, April has a writing community as well. She has Wildfire Magazine, but she also uses that platform to help women share their stories, learn how to write their stories. So April, first, tell us a little bit about what inspired you to start Wildfire.
Yeah, so It's a really selfish project, honestly, at its core. After my year of 13 months-ish of active treatment ended and I was declared no evidence of disease, I found those years following that to be harder than, you know, receiving that diagnosis.
And, same.
Yeah. And I... you know, being diagnosed at 35, I was the youngest person in that chemo lounge, and no one else in my friend group or my colleagues, my family, no one else was going through that at that time. I did have some aunts and a grandmother who had breast cancer, but I discovered it was different when I had a little child and I was still, you know, building a really budding career and all the stuff we talked about with intimacy. And so I really felt like something maybe was wrong with me, that I wasn't bouncing back to normal the way that everyone kind of told me I would all through that treatment year. And so I started Wildfire after I found my first, you know, in-person younger person who had cancer. She and I met actually in a writing group that was for memoir, but it wasn't cancer specific, but we kind of spotted each other across the way. One, because we were the only two people who weren't like of retiree age in there. And second, because we both just having had cancer stories kind of pouring out of us. And I discovered upon meeting her that I was really hungry to find other people who had also been diagnosed on the younger side. And like I said earlier, it was more about how they were living past that. Like when I met this friend, her name is Becky, I could not get enough of her because I just wanted to know how she was doing every aspect of her life past diagnosis. And so I started Wildfire as a way to amplify the younger voices in the breast cancer community and to take that story deeper. And it was just so I would have a map. Like, I needed that roadmap forward. So that's where it came from.
Yeah, I love that. I think so often we do start projects, like you said, for selfish reasons. And I think that's okay. Because I started See Jane Wright for selfish reasons, because I had just moved and I was working at a newspaper, and then I moved to Birmingham to teach, and I missed having other women writers around me. And I knew that if I was going to try to continue writing while teaching, I was going to need a group of women writers kind of cheering me on and holding me accountable. And I couldn't find the group that I was looking for, so I created it. So I think it's totally okay when we start things for selfish reasons, because they end up helping other folks too. You know,
that's true.
You've touched so many lives through Wildfire, the magazine and your community and your workshops. And all of that, you've touched so many lives. So, so it's totally okay to be selfish because you end up helping other people along the way.
It's true. Yeah, actually, and I'll say one more thing on that. I think, you know, the fact that it was a selfish jumping off point also continued to give me the fire in my belly to get through when, you know, it got hard or, you know, the initial excitement kind of wears off. There has to be some other fire that keeps the passion for the project going. And the fact that I still needed answers really helped.
Yeah, absolutely. So a part of what you do is, I mean, obviously, so Wildfire, if someone hasn't read it, and you should, by the way, Wildfire is each issue is a collection of different stories. Sometimes there's poetry as well from women who are going through cancer, have gone through cancer. And a lot of these women aren't professional writers. And so a lot of what you do is kind of encouraging and even coaching folks to write their story. So what are some of your top tips for someone who wants to share their story with others? I saw this quote from you, actually, and you said that writing is the inhale, and then when you share it with others, that's the exhale, which I love that. So what are some of your tips for folks who have written this story, and now that they want to share it with others, they know they need to rewrite it, they're just not even sure how to get started? Your top tips for someone who wants to write and share their story with others?
Yeah. Oh, I appreciate this question. I would say I'll take it in kind of two parts, because I think, you know, if you are listening and you haven't started writing your story, or you're just not sure how to start, I think that is a little bit different than you've written something and you maybe want to share it.
Okay.
Because, you know, we have to, I think like the first part is getting it out, because if you don't have like an urgent need to get your story out, it's kind of harder to write something to share. And so stoking that fire of a story within you that you want to bring out, I think, is the most important part. And so my first tip for that would just to start with the groundwork of what expressive writing is, which is to write without concern for the grammar, the spelling, you know, the other constructs of writing that sometimes get in the way of someone writing their story. And so expressive writing just invites us to use stream of consciousness to just get the story out on the page. I'm a huge fan of prompts for that. So you can find writing prompts anywhere. I know Javasia has a bunch, I have a bunch, but they're all over the place. And basically a writing prompt is just that entry point onto the page. So you don't have to kind of think about what your story is and then write it. You more use a prompt to elicit some kind of emotion, or, you know, ask you a question, and that gives you an entry point to the page. So I would say just start with a prompt and stream of consciousness. And your prompt can even just be as simple as what I really want to say is. And then you just let it rip from there. And then if you want to share it, I would say, you know, read over your writing that you've done in maybe a 10-minute sprint or a 15-minute sprint and see what parts of that you really like. It's possible you didn't even get to what you really wanted to say till the end of the 10-minute sprint if you were doing it timed, which I do recommend. And so once you know that you've got something on the page and then you start to have that desire to share it, look back at your writing and just say, okay, what do I really want someone to walk away from this knowing about me? And is that on the page yet? And if it's not, just keep going and keep asking that question and keep kind of drawing it out.
I love that. That's so good. That's so, so good. Now, what about folks who want to start journaling? This is a podcast about journaling, so probably most of the people listening, they want to journal. A lot of them may be kind of struggling with starting a practice. What kind of advice would you give them?
So I think that the real magic in journaling comes from consistency. And, you know, it's so hard to start a new habit. And there's lots of great resources on starting habits, like James Clear and Atomic Habits is a great book for that. But I have found one of the best ways for me in starting a habit, and I definitely have journaling on this, is to have an app that is a habit tracker app. I love creating streaks, you know, which is just that consistency day in, day out, and to have some kind of visual representation of that streak. This could also just be your calendar. You know, you put a star on the day that you journaled, and then you collect all those little stars. I have an app that I use called Habit Now, and I have journaling as one of the things that I track in there. Drinking water is another one, getting my 8 hours of sleep. Like, I definitely count journaling as part of my self-care. And for it to really work, it needs consistency. So I would say, get some kind of format for tracking your consistency that works for you, that makes you feel excited to do it when you don't feel excited to do it, if that makes sense. You know, give yourself some kind of incentive. And for me, it's that streak and that visual of the streak.
I love that. It's almost like you're going to gamify it in a way.
Right. Exactly. I love yes. It. And bonus points for those rewards, right, for, you know, making it through.
I love that. So in addition to the magazine, you recently published an anthology, or I don't know if you refer to it as an anthology, but that's what I've been calling it. But it's a collection yeah. of some of the essays that you published over the years, also some new ones as well. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So as we're talking here, I'm actually closing in on the 1 year anniversary of that book. So I'm really excited about that. It's called Igniting the Fire Within: Stories of Healing, Hope, and Humor. And it does represent the kind of the best of the magazine from the first 6 years that I was publishing. And what I ended up doing was organizing the anthology into ages. As I said before, Wildfire is specifically a resource for people who were diagnosed on the younger side. So I organized the book in terms of people who were diagnosed in their 20s, people diagnosed in their 30s, and people diagnosed in their 40s. And it has 50 essays in it and 50 people from all over the world represented. And it's all stages of breast cancer. And it's been really fun to have the book out. It's been nice for me to have kind of a start here, like an entry point to Wildfire. And then I discovered a really fun thing is to travel around North America and do these little book tour events where people come and read their essays. And as we're talking, I'm 1 week out from doing this in Toronto. And so I'm very excited about that. Yeah.
That's really exciting. Well, congratulations on all of that. It's been really wonderful to see the success of Wildfire.
Thank you.
So, you know, as I said, we're recording this in Breast Cancer Awareness Month or Breast Cancer Action Month. And a lot of people who have not experienced breast cancer like we have a lot of misconceptions about breast cancer. I could go on and on about all of those, but I won't. But I will ask you, what do you wish more people, maybe just one thing that you wish more people understood about breast cancer?
Yeah, I think that's a really good question. I think that I wish that the awareness was more specific. I feel like at this point, we are all aware that breast cancer exists. And so I wish that the greater public knew that there were different types of breast cancer and that some of them get a lot less airtime, as it were, than the more common. Hormone-driven breast cancer is the most common, but when I was diagnosed, I had no idea that there were other types. I wasn't even diagnosed with a hormone-positive breast cancer. Mine was called HER2-positive, but there's also triple-negative. And then even beyond that, ductal breast cancer is the most common, but there's also lobular breast cancer and inflammatory. And above and beyond all of that is metastatic breast cancer, where it is spread, you know, into other organs. And so I wish that we had more awareness that was specific to the multiple types of breast cancer that exist.
Yes, I agree with that. And I mean, if you haven't experienced it, you don't, or if you're not close to someone who's experienced it, you don't know all of that. Even my husband, he still struggles with the terminology because he'll meet someone who's also a survivor and she'll ask like, oh, what type did she have? Did she have ductal or lobular? And he's like, I think lobular, I'm not sure. And I don't even know what those words mean. So it's really hard. So yeah, there needs to be more education around just the different types, just like you said. And one thing that I'm always preaching about is just getting people to understand, like you were saying, like it's almost harder, not for everybody, everybody's experience is different, but it's almost harder after active treatment because when you're going through treatment, you're so, I know for me at least, I was so focused on treatment that I didn't really have time to be sad or scared or anything. I mean, obviously I had my rough days, but usually that was just because of the side effects, right? Like I was upset because of the side effects, but I wasn't afraid of dying. I wasn't afraid of, I don't know. I was just mad because of the side effects. But then after you're done with treatment, then you're thinking about, you know, well, what if it comes back? Or how is this affecting me long term? What if my life is never the same? And spoiler alert, it will never be the same. And so then you've got to figure out, you know, how to deal with that. So I just wish that more people understood that survivorship is very difficult.
I think, do you mind if I piggyback on what you just said?
Not at
yeah.
All.
You know, I'm 11 years out, you know, as I said, and I've talked to a lot of people who've experienced breast cancer now. And I think part of the problem of, you know, this disconnect between thinking that the treatment is going to be the hard part and then the realization that it's the aftermath that's almost even harder. Even for people who are diagnosed metastatic, you know, we'll have periods of active disease and inactive disease. And sometimes when you don't have active disease, it's so hard because I think, and I'm just guessing, I'll see if you think this is right, but I think it's because there's so much focus on our team being our medical providers. And so you know, you have a chemo oncologist, a radiation oncologist, and a surgical oncologist. And so they're so focused on us and the care that they provide that it almost feels like that's all the care that's necessary. And it becomes all about that, but they are only focused on treatment. And so then you get to the other side and suddenly your care team evaporates and you're left with picking up the pieces. And I think that that's why we don't realize it's going to be so hard because no one says, oh, and here's your, you know, aftermath oncologist, right, or whatever, you know.
Exactly. I know when I, so I'm just 3 years out, and so I still see my oncologist pretty often, but I recently graduated, and that was their word, from seeing them every 3 months to every 6 months. And, mm-hmm. you know, they were celebrating this, and I was kind of celebrating it in front of them, but inside, right. I was kind of freaking out because I was like, but I kind of like seeing y'all every 3 months.
Exactly. Okay, so here's a secret. My oncologist tried to break up with me for probably 7 years. And I just kept being like, yeah, no. Not happening. Yeah, I was like, you're the smartest person I know. Like, you're the only one I trust. Like, right. And he's like, well, you know, there are also really smart, you know, gynecologists and other doctors. I was like, yeah, no, you can do it all.
Right, that's fine. Exactly. my oncologist, she is the only one I trust. It's like,
right?
When any other doctor I have tells me something, even if it has nothing to do with cancer, I'm like, right. I got to see what Dr. Burgos thinks about that.
100%. Yes.
So, yes, I totally understand that. So we're here on my podcast, but you have a podcast too. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, thank you for that. So the Wildfire podcast is called The Burn because it's all about fire over here. And so The Burn is 2 years old, and I discovered that I really love hearing people read their personal essays from the magazine aloud. I kind of alluded to this with the book tour that I'm on right now. But the podcast is a place where people who have been published in Wildfire come on to read their essays, and then we have the opportunity to get into the themes that come out through the course of their essay, but also I love talking storytelling craft and memoir craft, so it gives an opportunity to talk about that. I give writing prompts. I like to just inspire people to write their breast cancer stories in a way that they've probably never written them before or tried to write them before, so that's the goal of The Burn, is just to bridge the essays and the writers with the listeners and the readers.
Love it. So I am going to give you all your prompt for the week. But before I do that, let me tell you a little bit about how my podcast comes to life each week. The Righteous Babe podcast would not be possible without Creed 63. An inclusive space for the community and entrepreneurs to come together to work, create, and be inspired. Located in the historic Black Business District of Birmingham, Alabama, Creed 63 is much more than a place to work, offering a wide range of resources to support and connect emerging and established entrepreneurs. Creed 63 is also home to a wonderful podcast studio, where the Righteous Babe Show was born. Head to Creed63.com to learn more. Each week here on the Righteous Babe podcast, I give you a journaling prompt at the end of the episode because I want you writing, of course. And actually, April shared the journaling prompt earlier. She didn't know it, but because it's a prompt that she uses a lot. And like I said, I've been in some of her workshops, so I thought it would be fitting to use it as the prompt for this week. And that prompt is, what I really want to say is... And then you just write. Okay. If you're struggling with that one, another one you can think about is asking yourself, like, what is the story I need to tell? What is the story I need to tell? Or, like we said, the other one is, what I really want to say is. So try one or both of those. See what happens. Hit me up on social media and let me know how your journaling practice is going, how those prompts are going. And April, where can we find you on social media and online?
Yeah, thank you for that. So I would say the best place to go is the website. That's wildfirecommunity.org. But I am also on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram is wildfire_BC_magazine. And Facebook is Wildfire Community. And that's where all the goods are.
All right. And I will link to all of that in the show notes. April, thank you so much for being on the show today. This has been so much fun. Such a good conversation.
Oh, thank you. I could talk writer shop any day. So thank you so much. I
know. All right, everyone. So once again, feel free to reach out to me via social. I'm at Siege of Acia Wright and also at Righteous Babe, and you know how to spell it. But reach out to me anytime, again, to let me know how your journaling journey is going and how the prompts are going. And I hope you just feel encouraged to write your story and to share it with others. That's it for this week's episode of the Righteous Babe podcast. Remember, you have the power to write your way through anything and to the life of your dreams. Happy journaling.